But in a different way. I'm traveling today. I'm down in Atlanta, Georgia, and I did not bring Andrea Gray in my suitcase this time. So I'm gonna do the show solo, but with a special guest. I did bring in some reinforcements. I brought the homie Allison Tate, who is the founder of Avere Wealth, which is a great wealth management firm based here in Atlanta. And she's got a specialty in tax planning. So today we're going to have a conversation about tax planning. So let me give you her official resume / CV, and then I'll tell you how we reconnected. It's a great story. So Allison is from the DMV. She's a Howard graduate where she studied finance. She also has an MBA from Georgia State down in Atlanta, and she studied personal financial planning, which I think is just a really, really big deal. She's also a CFP professional, which is a certified financial planner designation, which again is kind of like the PhD for financial planning. But here's how Alice and I reconnected. So we have a similar background. We both worked at the same firm, Goldman Sachs, years ago. We did not know each other when we were there. But let me tell you how we reconnected recently. I was at the Jodeci concert in Brooklyn. And literally, and I hadn't seen Allison in a couple years. And Allison was right behind me as I was doing a Running Man in my seat.
It was wild.
Like, what are the odds? We were at the King's Theater in Brooklyn, like a huge, beautiful venue with like probably 1,000+ seats. And you're sitting right behind me.
Right behind you, having a good time.
So glad to have you today. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but we're going to talk a little bit about taxes today, and I bet you we're going to have a good time.
Of course we will.
I don't really like talking about taxes, but when I'm talking with Allison Tate, it's always a good time. So let's get into it, and I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Before I get started, I do have to say that this podcast is for informational purposes only. We are not giving you tax advice. Be sure to talk to your own tax professional before you implement any of these strategies. Don't try this stuff at home. I've been working on this for so long, getting Allison on this mic. So I really, really appreciate having you.
My pleasure. I almost forgot about us meeting at Jodeci.
Yeah. What was your favorite part of that concert?
Ooh, that's tough. Oh my gosh. First of all, they sang all the hits. Like, and they have hit after hit after hit.
They really do.
It was nonstop. I loved it.
So you're having my baby. Yo, so back in the day, you know, like what I loved about Jodeci, for one, like they had brothers in a group that were like real skinny and you could see their ribs. Like that's how I was back in the day. And they were like hardcore and like street, and like there was Boyz II Men, and like a lot of folks gravitated there. But I was more of a Jodeci fan. Were you a Boyz II Men or a Jodeci person?
Jodeci fan all day.
What was it about Jodeci for you that got you into them?
Just the Bad Boys. I just was younger. I was into Bad Boys and they totally fit the theme.
Yeah, and I love that. So I just thought like us reconnecting at that concert was amazing, because it's like, yo, if you see someone at the Jodeci concert, y'all have a lot in common. That's all I'm saying.
That's right. We have a good time. I'm excited to get started and talk about taxes.
First of all, who's ever excited to talk about taxes? Is that a thing?
Just as tax nerds, I'm guessing, right?
How'd you get into this?
Okay, so I entered my financial advisory career kind of as my second act. I was a career changer. And I started at Goldman Sachs here in Atlanta as a financial planner. And what's so interesting is that every financial planner at that firm had to go through tax planning, because we worked with corporate executives of Fortune 1000 companies, and they had complex executive comp, RSUs, ISOs, large bonuses, deferred comp.
Explain it.
No.
ISOs, you know, you got to explain that.
Those don't really exist anymore, so we're not going to explain the ISOs. Most people don't have those still remaining anymore, but they are incentive stock options that have a tricky tax component to them. So in order to do that tax planning, they wanted us to have all that education. So we all became registered tax preparers with the IRS, went through extensive tax training every year to maintain that designation. And we also prepared our clients' tax returns. Now, at the time, it sounded like a chore because I got into this to be a financial advisor and I never thought I would be doing taxes. But I realized it's the only part of the job where the answer is right or wrong. And if the answer is wrong, you could go to jail.
So you could be hanging out with Wesley Snipes and now I gotta say R. Kelly and Diddy. And it's crazy how I think these guys are like all in like real tough prisons too, by the way.
That's right. You don't want to be in that company.
Yeah. So, you know, everyone knows I used to work at Goldman too. And what's funny, I had my last year at Goldman partnered up with people from Allison's team. This was ACO. Were you part of, okay, ACO was part of Goldman. ACO was like, you know, a company that Goldman acquired because they had financial planning specialists. And the way it would work is was that we would bring on clients. The wealth management person would handle the investments, which was me, and the planner would handle taxes and planning. And in reality, it didn't work that way because when I was there, only Goldman partners got a chance to get the coverage from both an ACO person and a wealth manager. Did they ever figure that out?
No, they didn't.
So were you covering Goldman partners?
It was discussed at one point, but I did not go that route.
So you guys had corporate execs as your clients? Yeah. And so were you doing the investments and the planning then?
Yes, I did.
Which makes a lot more sense because like the investment job, like I hate to like depreciate my own stuff, but like it's kind of the easiest part of the job. Wouldn't you agree?
It's the sexiest part of the job.
It's sexy, but it's easy. Like the planning stuff, that actually uses a lot more of your gray matter.
No, that's true. It absolutely does.
Like the investments, like, look, once you learn investing and you got a master's degree in finance, undergrad degree in finance, like once you get that level of education, like you can really invest in your sleep.
Absolutely.
But the planning, like tax planning, estate planning, just financial planning in general, in my opinion, has a much bigger impact on a person's life than their investments.
Absolutely, right? Because the investments are just one part of the pie, right? The investments might be, your goal might be to grow the biggest pot of assets, investable assets. But that pot is funding other dreams. It's funding your retirement. It could be funding your child's college education. It could be funding wealth transfer. And all of those things are other parts of financial planning.
Absolutely. So I'm excited today about this conversation. I'm also excited just to highlight another Black-owned business, another woman-owned business that's in the same space as mine, but doing it a little differently. Like we don't have as much of a tax expertise as you do. We do a lot of the stuff that you talk about, but like I learn from you every time we talk, and you're a person who I rely on when it comes to planning. When I have different complex situations, I'll bring them to you. In certain cases, my firm will hire your firm to come in and do some tax planning. So I'm looking forward to this conversation today.
All right. I am as well.
All right. So let's think about this in levels because there's always levels to it. Let's start with like everyday kind of tax planning. Like think about the person, for instance, who like everybody wants to minimize their tax bill for the most part. Like I actually met one person that was like, no, I don't want to minimize my tax bill. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. They were in a high bracket, but like this is like a unique perspective. Like this couple was like, they both grew up in public housing. They were both beneficiaries of things like welfare, food stamps, and affordable housing programs. And they were like, I think that the government will do a better job of, you know, sharing the wealth that I make than companies and philanthropists will. So they wanted to increase or have high tax bills. It was a white couple.
Okay. They thinking, under what administration?
Yeah, this was,
It matters.
Yeah, this is like a Biden era.
Okay.
You know,
So that's different. So I will say that's different, right? Depending upon, like, your political leanings. I did have clients during the Biden era who were like, I don't mind paying, being in the highest tax bracket. I don't mind paying that additional 3.8% net investment income tax under the Obama administration.
Black client or white client?
White.
We got some good white brothers and sisters out there. I'm not mad at them. I'm really excited. But like for most of us, we want to kind of minimize our tax bill. Like we don't want to go to jail, but we want to make sure like the way our tax system works, it really, I describe it as like the honor system a little bit. Like they give you the laws and the rules and the books and the charts and the tables. And then it's up to you to fill out the paperwork. And it's up to you to report your income accurately. You can take whatever deductions you're legally eligible for. And if you forget a deduction or you weren't aware of one, no one's going to come help you.
Not at all. And a lot of prospective clients come to me just in that same boat saying, I know that this was filed incorrectly last year or maybe the last 2 years, but I didn't know what I didn't know. Can you help me? Can you take another look at the return and tell me what I missed? And I would say 9 times out of 10, I always find at least something that will enhance their tax position.
Like, let's start there for a minute. Like, I know somebody's like, wait a minute, enhancing your tax position? I've never did that before. So, like, what are some mistakes then you found when you've audited someone's tax return? Like, what are some common things, if there is such a thing?
Let's start with the W-2 person who works in corporate America, who receives restricted stock. Maybe some, let's just say restricted stock from their company. So oftentimes what would happen is the stock would vest. The stock, basically you have this vesting period, the stock would vest, it would become taxable income to you, but there's a basis involved in which basically.
Yeah, the basis is like the floor, and yes, you pay tax on everything above it when you sell the stock.
That's correct.
So they use the wrong basis.
So what ended up happening was that when it's how it was reported on the 1099, sometimes there is no basis.
Mm.
It's just listing 100% proceeds. And so if you don't know that there is a floor or a basis, you're reporting 100% proceeds with no basis.
Mm. And you out here running no basis.
Right.
If you got no basis, and I got you. Yeah, because also like going to that point, like, back in the day, when they would give you a brokerage firm and give you a 1099 form, they would have no cost basis on it. When we say basis, what we're saying is like, what is the amount you paid for the stock or the RSU, the restricted stock unit? Because you only pay tax on the growth on that. And if you don't give them a basis or a cost basis and tell them what the floor was that you actually put out, then you end up paying tax on the whole thing.
Yeah, and the same thing would often happen with clients who had stock options as well. There wouldn't be any basis reported. The strike price is your basis.
Yeah, the strike price is your basis. All right, so that's one. So improper accounting of gains, let's say that. What else?
But that's a big one, though, because typically if you're reporting a transaction with no basis, and you could be talking about adding $50,000, $100,000 plus of income to your tax return, that's a really big impact.
Yeah, we're gonna let that marinate.
You bet.
Yeah, a lot of times I will tell you this, like people are using TurboTax or some online free or slightly paid tax service. Folks are starting to use AI to do their taxes.
God no.
And it's easy to make mistakes. It's like those systems are set up to be easy to use, but they're not really set up to be thorough.
That's right. I've seen quite often are people who have rental real estate. So what happens is they'll normally, you know, they know that to put the rental property on the tax return, on their Schedule E, they know to report the rental income. They know to report the expenses that they incur on that for managing that property. Let's just say it's potentially mortgage interest, real estate taxes. Maybe you're paying someone to market the property. Maybe you are cutting the grass. Maybe there's some repair. Those are normal expenses that most rental properties owners put on their tax return. But they're always, oftentimes they miss a big one, and it's depreciation.
Really?
Seriously, you have no idea how many returns I see with rental properties that have no depreciation.
That's crazy. Like for me, it seems to me that like the main reason to invest in real estate besides the income and the potential for appreciation is the fact that you can depreciate, aka amortize from the Latin word amort, which means to kill off over time. I learned, I got a big education like you. And it allows you to write off some of the expense of owning that place. So like I'll give you the amortization of a home is typically over almost 30 years, right? So if I bought a crib for 300K, I divide that by 27 and a half or so. And that allows me to write off like almost 10,000 per year in expenses against my income, which means if my tenants paid me 20,000, I only paid tax on like 10,000 of income.
That's right, but who taught you that?
My mama.
Missing, right? It's the lack of education, right? People don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And depreciation is a phantom expense. You don't pay the depreciation every year. That's why it's often missed. And you have to create a depreciation schedule. And like, good luck trying to figure that out on your own.
So then that's the case probably for a lot of people that own assets that are depreciable, whether they be business assets, real estate assets, land, oil, what's the
Oil
oil
and
rights,
gas.
oil and gas interest. Like a lot of that stuff has depreciation, depletion. So a second one, so you're saying people literally do not take a depreciation expense.
Right. And so what ends up happening is there's more profit in that rental property than there should be. Typically, with depreciation, that rental should be realizing a loss every year, a small loss. Now, whether or not you can benefit from that loss in the current tax year depends upon a couple of things, but typically most rentals produce a paper loss every year.
So there's different classifications of income. There's, your wages or what kind of income versus your rental property. How, do those cross over? Like if I lost money on rental property, can it impact my wage, the taxes on my wages?
Yes, those sources are considered ordinary income. So any losses potentially on a real estate property, assuming you can take those losses and you meet those rules to take the losses, they can offset your W-2 income.
All right, you're hiding behind some rules the way y'all tax people like to do. So, like, what would be a person who can take the loss? Let's say I work at Acme Corp. Remember that from Looney Tunes back in the day? Okay, I work at Acme Corp. And I make $200,000 a year. Let's say I got a good job, a black job. Okay, and let's say my rental property lost me $10,000 net of all the different things that you're gonna do to make sure I maximize the losses on paper. So how would I qualify to deduct that loss against my 200K in income? Ballpark.
Okay. It really depends on if that rental property is short-term or long-term rental.
All right, break that down.
Okay. All right. So let's just start with short-term. Let's just assume it's a short-term rental property. So it's more like an Airbnb type property, right? You don't have a long-term tenant that's in there for 12 months. You have someone staying in that property for less than, let's call it 10 to 14 days at a time, right? So that is a short-term rental. So, assuming that it is a short-term property where your tenant stays less than 7 to 10 days in that property, then you qualify for something called a short-term rental loophole, where for the tax purposes, the government considers that to be an active activity. You're almost like running a hotel business.
Okay. All right. I like it.
And because of that loophole as a short-term rental, those losses in the Airbnb type property can offset your W-2 income.
Now, what if you don't do it all year? Like, what if you did it for a couple months and then you got a long-term renter after that?
Okay, you're really splitting the roles at this point because you actually go into a gray area because it really just depends.
I like the gray. I live in the gray. I do dye my grays though. I don't know about you, but like the grays are, they're taking over up here. And what's funny, I saw my mom the other day, and mom was like, "I love how your beard is turning gray. I'm waiting for the rest of it." I was like, "Yeah, mom, my beard is gray because I dyed it here on top of my head, and I don't feel like dyeing my beard because like I get a little bit of respect from a little bit of gray. I just don't want it to be taken over, but I digress."
Okay. Big enough. I'll leave you with your gray area. All right. But I would say that is a more complicated situation where you definitely would want to consult with your tax professional. Okay. So let's now talk about if it's a long-term rental. You have a long-term tenant, someone who, maybe stays in there for the entire year. Under that instance, then you actually have to qualify for active or material participation. Now, there are a number of tests. There are actually seven tests.
Dang, we still taking tests in 2026? Good gracious.
There are tests, and you have to take this test every single year. You have to qualify and pass this material participation test. So let's just say there are several tests, but the ones that you hear most often are someone maintaining or working more than 500 hours in the rental activity per year.
500 hours, bro.
How do you do that with a real job, with a W-2? How
Listen,
do you do that with a day job?
500 hours, bro.
Exactly.
I mean, 40 hours a week times 10, yeah, that gets you 400 hours. And 10 weeks is like almost 3 months. I mean, like, I'm a landlord. I don't think I'm working 400 hours.
And most people aren't. Most people don't meet that test. There are other tests that say you work substantially.
Wait, I'm sorry. And just to be clear, do you have to pass all the tests,
No,
or
no,
you
no.
literally just got to pass one of the tests?
One of the tests. One of the tests. Okay.
Got it.
All right. One of the tests. So one of these seven, but I'm just going to highlight the top three that most people use or most of my clients use. So one is the 500-hour test. The other is if you substantially do all of the work in that activity, you could qualify for material participation.
So that means I collect the rents, I trim the hedges myself, I don't know. I'm picturing the Sanford Arms in Sanford and Son.
Would say basically, as long as you don't have a property management company, you could probably meet this test.
Okay. What if your kids are doing it? Does that count as you?
No, but your spouse can do it.
Come through, spouse. Okay. My boy was asking me the other day about benefits of getting married, and this is not one I can add to the list.
Listen, it's really so a lot of taxpayers are using it as another version of a loophole. So a lot of families want to start their real estate empire, but you have may have one person who works a day job. But you might have a stay-at-home spouse or a semi-retired or retired spouse. They could easily start managing these properties for you and qualify because you are married filing joint.
I love that. One of my homeboys is about to be a kept man, and I'm so proud of him for hitting the jackpot in that way. So this could be a way he could,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
yeah, he gets some respect
Yeah,
in his house.
that's right. Earn his keep.
All right, we got to go to break in a sec, but was there a third that you want to tell us about, the test of how to make sure you could qualify for active losses that would offset your W-2 income?
Yeah, you would need to work 100 hours during the course of the year, but also more hours than anyone else. So if you had a property manager who worked 180 hours a year and you worked 100, you wouldn't qualify. You need to work substantially more hours than anyone else in the activity.
So if you worked 195 hours, would that count?
Yes, it would count.
Okay. Can the work be like, hey, I was on these spreadsheets. I was like a freak in the spreadsheets doing all the math, making sure that my property was running well on paper? Because that
That
counts.
does count. That does count.
Ah,
Yeah.
okay, I'll be a freak in the spreadsheets then.
All right.
Okay, we are hanging out, but almost too good of a time to be talking about taxes today. But I'm with the homie Allison Tate. As I mentioned earlier, Andrea Gray is not on the show today because I'm on the road and I did bring my mic, and I'm hanging out with Allison Tate of Avira Wealth. We'll go to break, and when we come back, we'll keep the party going. I'm Alan Boomer, and we are the Momentum Advisors. We are back. Still talking about taxes, but having more fun than should be allowed.
For you, I'm having a great time.
So before the break, we were going through, you were giving us some like mistakes that you've caught in your audits of clients who come to you and say, "Look, I've been doing my own taxes," or "I had a guy, can you take a look at this?" And then you find some stuff that they messed up on. Are there any more that you want to hit on?
I'd say the last one is for anyone who has a side hustle or is a new entrepreneur. If you started a business and are claiming income or expenses on a Schedule C, there's often some expenses that you are overlooking. When you talk about business expenses, you're thinking about anything that's ordinary and necessary to engage in that activity. And that can be a number of different things. How I uncover missing expenses is basically by asking the person what their day looks like. They might say, "I got up in the morning, I needed to make a deposit at the bank. After I left the bank, I met a prospect for lunch. After I met with that prospect, I needed to go, meet with someone else or pick up some documentation, or maybe I went to the printers and had this banner and some flyers prepared for an upcoming demonstration that I'm having." And basically, in that conversation of them walking me through their day, I've uncovered mileage. There's mileage there. There is meals with the prospect.
Well,
There are supplies.
preach, preacher.
Potentially, the cost of using Wi-Fi, parking, all of those things just kind of come up, and you telling me about your day. Maybe some merch becomes an expense. And so it's just really understanding what do you do in a given day? And I can take it a step further and say, well, are you working in your home? If you have a dedicated space in your home in which you do your business, and it can't be the kitchen table where your whole family sits and eats all their meals, but if you have a dedicated workspace in your home, then that is your office. And whatever percentage of that office occupies your total home, like whatever that percentage is, let's just say your office is 10% of your home square footage, then 10% of your home expenses are potentially expenses for you.
Percent could be a corner in your apartment. You
Absolutely.
could,
Absolutely.
it could be like a studio apartment, but this little section over here, roped off by Air Force Ones, that's my office.
That's your office. It counts.
So let's go through that one again. So I have a business. I'm not really balling yet. I'm not making a ton of money, but I am using the business use of the home as an opportunity to write off some expenses. Like which rental or even homeowner expenses can you count under business use of the home?
I'll just assume that you own the home in this instance. You could potentially write off a portion of your mortgage interest, a portion of your real estate taxes, a portion of your HOA dues, a portion of your utilities. So your internet, water, maybe you have a security alarm system, maybe you pay for trash pickup, maybe you have a home cleaner, someone clean your home regularly. There's a percentage that you could write off towards the business.
Pool cleaner.
I would say no to the pool cleaner.
Office is in the pool. Okay, fine. Fine. See, I tried to get that one past you. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. I like this. I like this. And then can I, you talked earlier about depreciation. Can I get any of that on that 10%?
Yes, you can. But you probably don't want to, because whenever you sell the home, you'll have to recapture some of that depreciation from that space. So then you'll end up paying potentially more taxable gain on the sale of that home than you would have if you did not take depreciation on that space. But I actually want to go back to the expenses, because I think people get this misunderstood. When people get really excited around, oh, I can write off my rent, I can write off my mortgage, I can write off everything. Basically, you're doing that under the home office deduction. You can only write those things off to the extent that you have income to offset it.
Does that mean the business itself has to have income?
Yes, the business itself must have income. So let's just say you have identified $15,000 of home office deduction type expenses, but you didn't make any income that year. You do not get to take the $15,000 deduction. It will be carried forward for future years in which the business, it will be carried forward for future years that when the business has income, those expenses will be used.
But the other types of business expenses you talked about in your example, so I took the homie out to, lunch and we talked business, my mileage, like those other more direct business expenses, if they push me into a loss position on the business side, can't that offset my W-2 income?
Yes, you can take those expenses. They are legitimate at that point, even if it pushes you into a loss on that Schedule C. And then that loss carries forward to the front of your 1040 and will offset other ordinary income you have, potentially from a W-2.
Okay. All right. Any other big catches? I would say the businesses become, I mean, like you gave like two major keys, I think, like investing in real estate, major opportunity for some tax write-offs, and having a small business, major opportunity for some tax write-offs. Let's now go, we're gonna stay on that basic level, and let's think about like everyday things that folks can be mindful of. Like picture the person that, they work a job, they work at Acme Corp, they're making the anvils, you know what I mean? Like they did on Looney Tunes. And they have a brokerage account where they're putting some investments, they're putting money into their 401k. Like what are some kind of other basic things like you can be mindful of to just be thoughtful about minimizing your tax bill?
You want to maximize every opportunity that your employer provides to save on taxes. So leverage the heck out of all of your employee benefits. So that looks like making sure that you're maxing out on your 401k, even when it feels like you can't afford to, you always can. You will always figure out a way to live on your take-home pay. If you have a health savings account, maxing that out every year. It's the only asset today or investment today that is triple tax advantaged, right? The money goes in tax-free, it grows tax-deferred, and when used for qualified healthcare expenses, comes out tax-free.
Yeah, if we just take a moment and spotlight that HSA for a minute. Like, this is probably, in my opinion, the most slept-on account out there. Like, everyone knows about a 401k, which is also a great account. But that HSA can be the way that you pay for long-term care in the future. It could be used for your healthcare expenses when you're older. You can use it for expenses now, but like, it's almost like a Roth IRA for healthcare expenses.
It really is. And I agree with you. I feel like the HSA is kind of the goat, right? Because I have so many clients who are concerned about the rising cost of healthcare, even if they might be out of work for a year and they needed to get healthcare on the exchange. Just looking at what those costs are for their family today, their mind automatically goes to what could that cost be 20, 30 years from now when I retire? And they are terrified. They really are. But having funds built up in that HSA helps alleviate some of that burden because you can use some of those funds for healthcare costs.
Yeah, a lot of us know from, years back where you use it or lose it in any given year. And so folks are scrambling in December to go get their teeth cleaned and whatnot. Like now, the HSA, the money just sits and it grows just like an investment account. And if it grows to be, six figures, like that's meaningful dollars that you can use later. And at the end of the day, you don't need it for healthcare, then it becomes like a regular IRA account that you can use to off to enhance your retirement.
So I want to make sure that everyone understood what you said because you actually perfectly described how to use the health savings account. You are putting money in it. You are not touching it. You are not depleting it every year. You are investing. You are now paying for those expenses that, when you go to the doctor's office and they ask you for your copay, you aren't using your health savings account card. When you need to buy new contacts, if you need to buy medications, you are buying that with your own cash. You are not using the health spending account, right? You are intentionally depositing money into that account and investing it into the stock market for that long-term appreciation. That is the whole purpose of the HSA.
And the only catch, if there was a catch, you have to be in a high deductible health plan, which when you're picking your insurance plans, they literally have the letters HDHP right in the name of the plan or somewhere, right underneath the name of the plan. So you can know whether the plan fits your needs or not. Like I personally am not in a high deductible health plan right now because I got some sickly jokers in my house. Like like I have asthma. My kids have braces. Like, it's like stuff like that kind of prevents me from doing it. But best believe the moment that the braces are done and it's, a lot less expensive to maintain my health plan, I'm going to switch to one of those plans and I'm definitely going to have an HSA in the future.
But that's one of those conversations that you should be having with your financial advisor. So every year that you go through open enrollment, you know if there are procedures that might be coming up on the horizon. So that may not be the year that you want a high deductible health plan. Or if someone in your household, if your spouse happens to be pregnant, I've done the math on it. Most times being on a high deductible health plan is not beneficial in the year that someone gives birth. Right, so you just want to plan to make sure that you are in the right plan in any given year.
Yeah, and it's hard to know if you're gonna get pregnant or not.
Understood.
I got three kids, and I only like knew about one in advance.
Doesn't always work, and no, life is not happening. Perfect.
Same, by the way. If they're listening, like I want all of them. I'm glad they're here, but like one of them was definitely, "Hey, let's do this." Two was like, "Wait, what?" Three was like, "You gotta be kidding me again." In a good way, in a loving way, is what
Of
I'm
course, of
saying.
course.
All right. So let's also go back to that same person. They maxed out all those employer plans. You brought up an idea that, the idea of mutual funds versus ETFs, exchange traded funds, from a tax perspective that I don't think a lot of people.
Yeah, when you think about mutual funds, and we're only talking about funds that are in taxable brokerage accounts, not IRAs. Right, so something that's going to spit out a 1099 and you're going to be taxed on that income. So when you think about mutual funds, I feel like they are like our fathers, our grandfathers' investments, right? So most people today still might have some lingering mutual funds because when you first started investing, you heard your parents talk about mutual funds. So you might still have these funds kind of lingering around in your portfolio, but what you don't realize is that that portfolio manager is trading throughout the year. And they might have sold a really large portion of their portfolio to meet their allocation needs. And unbeknownst to you, at the end of the year, you are going to receive your distributive share of that gain, even though you did not sell any part of your mutual fund. So it's almost like a Christmas surprise, but not in a good way. Where you basically receive this capital gain distribution that you may or may not have known that it's coming, and it could be quite large.
And it may feel like phantom income. Like you might not like I bought the fund, hey, I'm all excited, and then they're giving me a daggone tax bill.
For this. So last year, I had a prospect who came to me wanting a tax assessment. He inherited a portfolio from his father that had a lot of mutual funds in it. So So as we're kind of as I'm talking through ways to save on taxes, at this point, it was kind of in Q4. So the fund managers had already reported an estimated amount of what that gain would be. So I had a really good number of how much gain each fund was going to spit off. And it was six figures. And, you know, I told him, like, hey, before this happens, you may want to sell that fund and buy the equivalent ETF. And he says, well, why would I do that? Because that means the fund performed well.
It's taxes, bro. The people don't understand, like, the taxes and the performance, these things are not necessarily connected.
Not at all. And so while I tried to explain it to him, but he just was like, well, that means I made money. No, it's fine. I'll do every other part of your strategy besides converting my mutual funds to ETFs. So then I did his tax return. And basically he called me angry.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. We did all of this other planning. I really thought I would be in the X tax bracket. I would have X taxable income and that I would owe X. What happened? What did you do wrong? Like really pointing the finger at me. Like what did you do wrong, Allison?
I knew I couldn't trust you, Allison. Now he's looking at you like, you shady.
Right. And so I'm sitting here like, okay. And you know what the answer was? Those gains. Those.
Lord. And by then you can't really do anything about it.
It's done. It's over. The gain is spit out to you. It's on the 1099 and now it's taxable income to you. Sorry. He's switching to ETFs this year.
Yeah. Smart. It would have behooved him, as my dad would say in church, to have done it earlier, but okay.
He needed to see it. He needed to see it for himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I will say, like, clients, like, we can give them the right advice all day, but, like, you know, they got to do it, you know? You also made me chuckle because you mentioned mutual funds versus ETFs, exchange-traded funds. How often do you get the question, and you're trying to figure out what they're actually asking you? Multiple times people come to me and say, hey, I heard I need to be in one of those EFTs.
Yes, I hear EFT all the time.
You're thinking like non-fungible token is here. Like you literally are like, bro, you're talking about an ETF.
Exactly, exactly. It happens all the time. And I understand it too. There's a lot of lingo.
And I love our people. I love our people. And ETF, just in case you don't know, it's an exchange-traded fund. And it, to your point, it's almost like the new version of a mutual fund. The tax treatment just happens to be a lot better. The fees happen to be a lot lower. And it's the benchmark instead of beat the benchmark. Mutual funds are trying to beat the benchmark. They often don't do it after taxes. But the ETFs is trying to just be the benchmark. And the benchmark, I always say, is like if you were investing in basketball, you could bet your money on the Atlanta Hawks to win the championship or the New York Knicks. Or you can say, you know, I want the entire Eastern Conference, right? That's like a grouping of investments that I get to buy with one ticker, one investment fund that has a bunch, you know, hundreds of different things inside of it. That's an ETF. And it's not EFT, y'all. And we're talking about taxes. I'm hanging out with the homie Allison Tate of Avere Wealth. We're missing Andrea today, but hopefully we'll get her back in the mix very soon. So we'll go to break. When we come back, we'll keep the party going. I'm Alan Boomer. We are the Momentum Advisors, and we'll be right back. It's the pathway to freedom. It's leading to the North Star.
Momentum. Advisor Show.
We're having a good time talking about taxes today.
Look at you. You're having a good time.
Yeah, I guess. Honestly, I just love you, Allison. Like, yo, you are the homie. Like, we worked at Goldman, but not at the same time. And I'm just so grateful that, I don't know if it was through the QADE, through the Association of African American Financial Advisors that we found each other, or if it was through the Goldman Network, but I'm glad you're in my life.
Actually, I think it was Ricky. Wasn't it Ricky?
From
what is together? From QADE?
From QADE.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Ricky.
People are like, who is Ricky? Well, Quade is an organization of Black financial advisors. It's a great organization. Like the thing I love about being a part of Quade is just to be able to, you know, just have people to, in some cases, commiserate with when, you know, you're talking about the struggles, but also just to bounce ideas off of, just to be a resource group and to just know that you're not alone as a Black financial advisor, because, you know, there's not enough of us and we're too isolated. So I love Quad A. Big shout out to that organization. So I want to talk about a couple more things. Again, for that regular person, you had this concept of filling up the brackets. And I understand it, but like I never heard it described quite that way. You want to get into that a little bit? Sure. Is that too deep?
Oh, we can do it. Let's do it. Everyone is so concerned about not paying more in taxes than they legally have to. And one of the ways that you could do that, if you have the opportunity to control the timing of your income, you can do a strategy called filling up the brackets, where you basically accelerate income into, you know, this the current year in order to fill up whatever tax bracket your household is in. And you don't want to pay or have a dollar more of income into the next highest bracket level.
Yeah, well, people have to understand our tax system is progressive. It means the more you make, the more they take, which means that, Allison, which what you're saying is like you want to be really mindful as your income grows in any particular year, that you could be pushed to the next bracket. And sometimes there's things that you can control, right? Like you mentioned, like, okay, maybe my income, like let's say I'm getting laid off from a job and I'm getting a severance package. Like you can negotiate to push some of that income into the following year, as an example. Or maybe there are some charitable things that you want to do, like fund your donor advised fund or give money to your church. Maybe it's good to do it all this year instead of next year, because this was a year you had some good income. But it's being, I'm going to call it pinpoint and precise with how your taxable income lands, as opposed to just seeing where it lands and just dealing with the consequences.
Yeah, I think most people just, they feel like taxes happen to them, right? They feel like they don't have an opportunity to plan when you are absolutely 100% in charge of your tax liability every year.
Which brings up a point. Like if you land a client that comes to you in January, February, March, or April, there's not as much that you can do for them versus if they came to you in September, October, November, December. Like you have an opportunity as a planner, I would imagine, to make an impact.
Argue September is too late. If you want to save money on taxes and for 2026, we're already in July. That planning should have already started.
And at the same time, it is July and they haven't called you yet. But like there are things that you can do in this tax year. With even if it's just the filling up the bracket strategy, right? There's stuff that you can do in this year and then you can set yourself up for next year. But I think a lot of people's relationship with their accountant or tax person is one of, hey, let me come to you with all the tax forms in hand already. And I'm just going to give them to you and you're going to tally it up for me. But as a planner, your goal is to get involved upfront. Your goal is to get involved in advance to see if you can have an impact on reducing that liability.
That's right. Tax planning is not tax prep. Tax prep, when you take your documents to your tax person at the beginning of every year, your W-2s, your 1099s, you giving them your shoebox of documents, and then just closing your eyes, crossing your fingers and toes, and hoping for the best that they work some magic out on the back end. There is no magic. They are literally putting the numbers into the machine and spitting out your liability. That is it. There's really not much planning that can be done at that point, besides potentially making some retirement plan contributions, depending upon your situation. But that's really it. If you really want to proactively plan, you want to get ahead of it sooner rather than later. Because again, a lot of these strategies that we, you know, could talk about, filling up the brackets, doing donor advised fund contributions, all of those things, you need to figure out like, well, how much of a contribution you want to make.
So let's get into a topic that I've done this thing before, But I want to get your perspective on it's the idea of a Roth conversion. Like a Roth IRA is one of our favorite IRA accounts because all the money in that account grows tax-free. As a financial advisor, I love when I have multiple tax locations I can plan with. A 401k, a Roth IRA, a brokerage account, an HSA, a health savings account. And sometimes people make too much money for a Roth. Like, talk to me about the concept of what is a Roth conversion. We'll get into the backdoor Roth contribution as well. But like, why would somebody do this? Who's a good candidate for it as well?
So this is really interesting because while so many financial advisors love the Roth conversion as a tax planning strategy, I don't.
I kind of don't like it either because in every case, you're increasing their tax bill in the current year.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you have to understand why. Like, the client needs to have a strong fundamental belief that their tax rates will be significantly higher in the future than they are today. And no one has a crystal ball. That's really the issue for me.
Now, I'll tell you the times when I have definitely done a conversion. And by the way, the reason we're saying that is that, let's say I have money in an IRA or even a 401k, and I want to convert it to a Roth. In order to do that, it's almost as if I took a distribution from that IRA account, which means every dollar that comes out of an IRA, a traditional IRA, it's treated as if I earned that money at a W-2 effectively. It's ordinary income, which, going back to filling up the brackets, it's likely to push me into a higher tax bracket. So you're basically paying the taxes now in exchange for growth later, which means there's also a concept. Yes, you need your tax bracket to be expected to be higher in the future, but also you want to live long enough, like, for this thing to pay off, right? So like, you're 85 years old. Don't talk to me about a Roth conversion at that point.
Yeah, I don't think it's a slam dunk for every client.
Yeah, one time that I did do one that was a slam dunk, no brainer. Like, I had a business owner, and in that one particular year, they just had a bad year. Their income was way down. Their taxable income was close to zero. I'm like, oh, you have a chance to convert. Actually, I think it went negative. I was like, oh, you have a chance to convert your entire IRA account into a Roth. And he did that and paid zero in taxes. That's a great opportunity. Or imagine the person that, let's just say, for example, they worked in corporate America and they left to go get an MBA for 2 years. And their income's going to drop during that time. That might be a time where you can afford to do a Roth conversion because you don't mind if your taxes go higher because you're starting from a much lower base. So I do agree that there's times when it does make sense. So what's crazy, my friend Allison Tate, like, we're literally almost out of time. Will you come back and wrap with us again in the future?
I would love to.
So let's talk a little bit about how folks can find you, because you're all, you got clients all over the country. So how can folks stay in touch with you?
Sure. So you can visit our website at AvereWealth.com. It's spelled A-V as in Victor, E-R-E, wealth.com. Or you can also find me on LinkedIn at Allison Tate. Allison is spelled with an E, so A-L-L-E-S-O-N. I will be the only Allison you will ever pop up with that spelling, I promise you.
I love how our moms, our Black moms, named us in these ways that are so helpful today with these internets, because I've got A-L-L-A-N, and it's a unique spelling. People mess it up all the time, but it's easier to find.
Absolutely, and I love just being unique, and I'm sure you do as well.
Absolutely. So I want to give you a shout. I want to give you your flowers and just say thank you for being so open, so willing to just share. And, you know, you got the homie Allison Tate's contact info. Feel free to reach out. You can also reach out to Momentum Advisors. You can go to our website, momentum-advisors.com. Go to the contact page, and you can schedule time to talk to any of the advisors at the firm. Or if you want to connect with Allison and you forgot the website, you can connect with us, and we'll send you over to Allison. So hopefully we'll be back in a week, and we'll get Allison back in the mix one day really soon. But I appreciate you, my girl. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Momentum.